When I was a teenager growing up here in Tulsa, I never once heard of the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, or as it was known at the time, the Tulsa Race Riot. It wasn't taught in schools and certainly wasn't part of the popular culture. And I only really discovered the incident when I was reading a novel in my late teens, a piece of historical fiction that was based around the Tulsa Race Massacre. And that sparked me to read more and find more nonfiction accounts, but it wasn't easy at that time to find more information. So as we near the centennial, general awareness of the massacre is certainly at an all-time high due to a bounty of news articles and books and documentaries and even scripted shows like HBO's Watchmen, but there's still quite a ways to go. And just this month, 99 years and 11 months after discussion and pauses and really a lot of consternation, Tulsa Public Schools finally rolled out a new curriculum to bring this history into the classroom or on Zoom or wherever they're doing classes right now. And these efforts, paired with the more pop cultural awareness, will hopefully give this tragedy the attention it's always deserved. In 1996, a full year or two before I became aware of the Tulsa Race Massacre, I bought and obsessed over the Nas album, It Was Written. If I Ruled the World, which was his collaboration with Lauryn Hill, was an inescapable earworm from that year. Nas recently did a commercial about, quote, black excellence for Hennessy. It's presented in the form of a letter written to his daughter, Destiny.
Dear Destiny, standing still, scared to death, holding you in my hands, I knew. I wanted you to see something I never saw, feel something our family had never grasped, black excellence. Something like the Greenwood District in Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921. 40 acres and 35 blocks of black folks running the town. Lawyers, doctors, businesses, all black owned. Imagine that. The vision of Black Wall Street was intentional, and so was its downfall. Why, Destiny? Autonomous black folks living this good? They took the city by force and burned it straight to the ground. 100 years later, 100 years strong, Destiny, you know a spirit that powerful could never be held down. Black excellence lives on. And those spirits, they never stop. They never settle. Black women building. Black men thriving. Destiny, believe in black creativity, black wealth, our potential, our people. Wherever black folks dream, the spirit of Greenwood is there. So find them, build with them, dream with them. Be your own Black Wall Street. However and wherever you imagine. My dear Destiny, I can't hold you in my hands anymore. You've outgrown my reach. But I hope I've inspired you the way you've inspired me. Your loving father, Nasir Jones.
There are many kinds of museums in cities and towns all around the world. But this season we're taking a closer look at one city, our city. In the spring of 1921, the thriving black community of Greenwood was destroyed in what came to be known as the Tulsa Race Massacre. 100 years later, we're still coming to terms with the trauma of those shameful days. But what role can museums and artists play in healing and reconciliation? From Philbrook Museum of Art, the Greenwood Art Project, and Public Radio Tulsa, I'm your host, Jeff Martin, and this is Museum Confidential 2021. Rick Lowe is one of two lead artists for the Greenwood Art Project alongside William Cordova. Born in rural Alabama, but a longtime resident of Houston, Texas, Rick's work has been widely acclaimed and he was awarded a coveted MacArthur Genius Grant. Rick is known for his championship of people and communities through social practice-based art, as evidenced in particular through Houston's noteworthy Project Row Houses, which Rick co-founded in 1993. Project Row Houses is an arts and cultural community located in Houston's Third Ward, one of the city's oldest African-American neighborhoods. I recently sat down with Rick and our co-host Jericho Wortham to talk about all the work that's been happening with the Greenwood Art Project and the approaching centennial. This chat was recorded the day after the guilty verdict came down in the Derek Chauvin trial.
I think before we begin, I would be remiss not to mention, you know, we're talking the day after the verdict in the George Floyd trial happened. And last year here in Tulsa, you know, during the COVID pandemic, Juneteenth is happening. All of these things combined to create this really fraught moment here in our city, but also a moment where we felt some hope about some potential for things to change. And of course, yesterday in some ways was the culmination of a lot of that. You know, where were you yesterday? Were you watching the verdict? You know, what was that like for, I'm sure Jericho as well, you know, what were you doing and what was that like for you know, for you to experience?
Well, interestingly enough, I had a phone call, a Zoom call scheduled with a group that I'm working with in Chicago. And we knew that one of them is a journalist. And so she was telling us that the verdict was going to come down, you know, in like, you know, a half hour or so. So it would have been in the middle of our meeting. And we discussed whether we were discussing whether we should have the meeting. And we said, yeah, let's do it. And so it was interesting. We were in the middle of the meeting when the verdict came down and everybody was just silent. You know, it was, you know, so everybody turned off their audio on the Zoom and just listen. And it was, it was pretty amazing, you know, that we're all able to turn back on our audio and talk about something that was, you know, that was some semblance of, you know, accountability and a response, a justful response. So that was really, it was kind of, I don't know if I was completely expecting that.
So, yeah, were you kind of really in a moment where you said either, you know, at this meeting is going to go one of two ways, you know, depending on what happens here, you know, and Jerrica, were you listening or watching live yesterday when that happened?
I did watch the verdict live. I could not participate in watching the trial just for a host of reasons, just being a member of Black America and having these situations happen far too often. And so I was torn. One, I was very thankful and thankful that justice was being served and that we had the opportunity to see the system working in the way that it should work. I'm then also balancing that with the fact that just up the road, a few, some states away, like that there's been another child that is taken senselessly as they are looking to police officers for assistance. And so we're still having to work on navigating the duplicity of what it is to be in America at this time and whether the the precedent that is set with this George Floyd case, whether it is a Band-Aid or whether it is a true example of how things will move forward in the future. And so I'm just, like many people in America, just kind of waiting to see exactly how it's going to play out. But I'm most thankful that the family of George Floyd has the honor paid to them that it was due to have the justice served.
Yeah, Jericho, you're right. It's not a celebratory moment, you know. I mean, it's a moment that we, you know, it's no time to celebrate, because this is just one instance, but there are many, many situations that are going on continuously, you know, and so, yeah.
You know, it's a great point, and it ties in exactly with what I would like to talk about the work you're doing through the art project. You know, obviously we have this centennial coming up, and it's not a celebratory centennial. At the same time, you're doing work that has hope and elements of celebrating the artist involved as well. How do you find that balance, Rick, when you were kind of taking on this project to say, we're commemorating this very solemn moment, this moment that's still unresolved in so many ways. But, you know, you want to balance it tonally with, you know, I'm seeing all these projects. I've gotten to know some of the artists now who are doing these projects. It's not all foreboding and dark. You know, there's very much a sense of moving forward and hope here. How, you know, was that something that was there from the beginning, Rick?
Yeah, well, fortunately, the, you know, the Tulsa massacre is very, you know, it's a complex, you know, situation, right? I mean, yes, there was the massacre, which, you know, that happened. But then there was also Black Wall Street. And so when we formed the concept of the project, it was around both of those, you know, both the massacre as something that, you know, needed to be commemorated within all the seriousness of acknowledging that horrible time and event. But on the other hand, you know, there was the idea in the that lives through the legacy of this idea of Black Wall Street, you know, the ability of Black people to sustain themselves in the most horrific, you know, conditions and circumstances, you know. So there's a certain kind of there's a way of surviving, you know, these kind of things. And I think that that's what a number of the artists that we selected wanted to focus on, you know, this spirit of determination, you know, of perseverance and that kind of stuff. And so I think that's why we're finding, you know, a lot of them kind of focusing on that aspect.
You know, we've had the great pleasure to talk to some of the artists, and, you know, to your point, one of the things that I think has been a great result of the work you're doing, and also just the work of more awareness about the history of Tulsa in relation to Black Wall Street and Greenwood, is, you know, so many people understanding that there was this second wave post massacre. You know, we were talking to Therese Aduni about the films that her father made, capturing that, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s era pre urban renewal in Greenwood. And a lot of people I still meet kind of have this sense that Greenwood basically disappeared in 1921 and it just never existed. But a lot of the work you're doing has kind of brought attention to that second period, which was very much a thriving moment there, especially in that, you know, 40s, 50s period. Was that, to your point, was that intentional or just something that kind of happened?
Well, I have to say that, you know, until I made my first kind of serious investigation into, you know, the Tulsa massacre, you know, being invited by the Centennial Commission, you know, to look into it, I was one of those people too that only knew of the massacre. You know, I mean, that was, you know, to me, you know, in my mind, that was what happened. That was the end of all, right? I didn't know about the legacy of Greenwood, you know, beyond the massacre, in which they, you know, came back and they rebuilt and all of this during this period before, as you said, urban renewal. And so it was inspirational to me. And that was a part that I was really, you know, that gave me strength to kind of, you know, look into this project and kind of figure out how to position it, because I just think that is an important part for people to know. It's great to look back and it's important to look back, you know, and to acknowledge, you know, where we've come from. But the reality is we're living now, you know, and how do we, you know, leverage you know, some of the historical moments in a way that can actually help propel us now. And I think that's what most of the, not most, but many of the artists in that's participating in the Greenwood Art Project are kind of really, they have their mind focused on that. They're like, you know, yeah, you know, that's our history, you know, but we are here now, you know, and we have to figure out how we grow and nurture, you know, this notion of Black Wall Street, this entrepreneurial, innovative, creative perseverance that exists, you know, through Black Wall Street into their lives now to be able to, you know, bring a kind of economic and cultural stability and growth to their community as it is.
I'm curious, what do you think?
Wait, in fact, that was one of the reasons why, you know, we kind of decided to focus on, you know, Tulsa-based and Oklahoma-based artists, because it would, you know, we felt that was really present in the people that I talked to, was about this notion of now, where they are now. And it takes the local people to bring that to bear.
Well, that touches exactly on where I wanted to go next, which is, you know, you're not from Oklahoma. You're not an Oklahoma artist. What are the benefits that you've seen from having that outside point of view versus if you had grown up here and knew this place? I'm sure, you know, there have been a lot of things you just mentioned that you found out for the first time. You didn't know this thing, as, you know, you're not a scholar on the history of Tulsa. You know, what's the benefit of having that outsider's look when you started working on this project?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the benefit for me was that, you know, I was an open book, you know, I mean, I approached it from the standpoint of honestly really trying to get to know this history and this community through the people that knew it intimately. And as I've said, you know, selecting artists and folks that had those deep roots there was a great way for me to do that. You know, for me to not come in trying to project or frame an issue, you know, from this kind of real broad perspective, but really go deep and intimate, you know, and to me, that's, you know, to me, that's where the deep learning is going to come from this piece of history. It's from the deep, intimate experiences of the people that are connected to it, rather than, you know, some kind of intellectual, scholarly, you know, approach to it.
We could spend probably 20 minutes going through the list of accolades and awards that you've won as an artist personally. And I'm curious, has this endeavor been bigger than you expected? Have you had to put some of your personal projects on hold to kind of oversee this? And how did you know what you were getting into, I guess is my question. You know, this is a lot of stuff that you took on. And was it a commitment you were hesitant to kind of get into because you're so busy doing all of your own personal work?
Well, you know, I have to say that, you know, prior to the first trip coming to Tulsa, I was actually kind of, you know, at a point in which I was, you know, had an opportunity to start kind of rethinking what I want to do for the next, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 plus years, you know, what, because I moved away from 25 years of leading project row houses in Houston. And I just kind of was able to start distancing myself a little bit from a project that I started in Athens, Greece. And I just started a painting practice. And so I was in a transitional place. And so, you know, getting into the Greenwood context was really amazing for me, because it has really given me a framework through which I will probably be working in for the next, you know, 10, 20, whatever plus years I have left, you know, because it's, you know, this notion of, you know, how Black communities sustain themselves, you know, I've worked at it from the standpoint of advocacy and I've worked at it, you know, from the standpoint of community building and those kinds of things. But now, you know, I'm really seeing this value around, you know, really, you know, kind of economic, you know, and entrepreneurship, you know, and that's kind of helped shape and frame my, you know, my kind of goal for work going forward. And so out of that, you know, unfortunately COVID came and it kind of minimized the, you know, the kind of time to move around and stuff. And, but it is really, it's consumed me. And this is something that I'm so excited and grateful that the folks in Greenwood reached out to me, because it's, yeah, it's been transformative for me.
Obviously, you know, as you mentioned, the pandemic has really put a wrench into the system of, you know, not being able to gather. But this was going to be remote in a certain sense anyway. You weren't living here in Tulsa, but so you come back and forth. But you do have this team on the ground here, including Jerrica here, for example. How did you go about putting that team together? You know, obviously it started, you know, how did you find the people to make the vision that you had, you know, with your co-artist, William Cordova, lead artist on the project as well. How did you kind of go about saying, you know, what kind of team do we need? Because it's not something that's ever happened before. There's never been a Greenwood art project. There's never been, as far as I know, an event like this, a response to it in the community, quite similar to what you're doing. You know, you're starting from scratch. How do you know what pieces you need?
Right, right. Well, you know, well, first of all, I would say, you know, I mean, I would have been remote on some level, but I have a tendency when I work on projects like this, I mean, I would think, you know, just, you know, if COVID hadn't have happened and kind of in a normal kind of situation, it would have been a situation I would have been in Tulsa like every month or a week or so, you know, and just kind of, you know, being there, being present and being with folks. But I will say this, one of the things though that has been interesting about, you know, the COVID situation is that, and I always know that when I work on projects that it's important to build a team and work to help empower them, you know, to be able to lead and do the work. But one of the things though, it's like the more you're around, the less that happens, right? Because you're kind of, you know, you know, with me not being around, it allows, you know, Jerrica to be fully the face, you know, of the project, which is really great. You know, she's a local person there. So I think not being around has been, you know, kind of helpful in a sense with the team. But as you asked the question about how the team came together, it was, you know, it's very organic because, as you said, it's not something that I knew exactly, you know, what to do and how to do it. But I did know that I wanted it to be as grassroots as possible, you know, and as locally based as possible. So, you know, and of course, Jeff Van Hanken was the, you know, my initial, you know, contact there. And so, you know, he kind of held my hand through the process of, you know, kind of, we put the Bloomberg proposal together for the Public Art Challenge together. And we had an initial team that didn't quite feel right, you know, and so we made some adjustments and we brought in Jerrica as a project manager. She was like our first, you know, big investment in the team. And then as it began to kind of shape out that this was going to be really grassroots and we were going to expand the opportunities of people that weren't necessarily, you know, formally trained artists, but people that had stories to tell and we wanted to work with them. Then I had to figure out, you know, how do we do that? You know, I mean, I have a sense of how to do it a little bit, you know, and I've worked with, you know, people across the spectrum of their experiences in the arts and stuff. But I wanted something that could really solidify as a formal, you know, to really formalize, you know, these, everybody that was participating. And William Cordova, who's been a colleague and friend for some years, and he's worked with us at Project Row Houses, you know, on a number of occasions, mentoring and training, you know, younger artists and stuff. And so I invited him to come. And then with him coming, you know, he really brought, I mean, William comes hard, you know, he comes hard and serious, you know, and he, I mean, this, the catalog that we've produced for this, for this project is fully driven by William, you know, and his understanding of how to put those together and all that stuff. And so he brought that level. And then having somebody on the ground that was doing a lot of documentation. See, I would do that kind of stuff sometimes when I'm, you know, if I'm there a lot, but I wasn't there. And so we had Marlon Hall to come in, who came in as someone who approaches this work as anthropological and documenting stories and that kind of stuff. So we have him on the ground doing stuff. And then, you know, Cody Ranson coming in with the Gap Band, you know, so we just kind of slowly built this team out in a way that that has allowed us to, you know, to bring multiple voices in, including, I mean, of course, all the artists. And then we have the folks that are making the mini docs of some of the projects and stuff. So the project's kind of moving itself out and touching a lot of different people in a lot of different ways, engaging them.
Jerrica, do you remember the first time you met Rick and what that was like? Was this in person, I'm imagining, before COVID hit? This was like in the pre-times, the early days?
Yes, I do. We were actually at Rudisill Library, and there was a community meeting when we were just, you know, speaking to a couple of the stakeholders. And at that time, I was not an official member of the project. I just wanted to come and just kind of experience the energy of the potential leadership and how they would engage with the community, understanding Tulsa's dynamics, understanding some of the behind the scenes that would need to come in place in order for this to be a successful project. And so one of the things that I remember registering to me was when he requested feedback regarding the community's thoughts on whether there should be a single larger installation or, you know, a few large installations, or whether this is something that should involve multiple members of the community. And I remember being so very excited to hear how he wanted to engage as many people as possible in the process of telling this story, that he really wanted the Tulsa artists and creative practitioners to really have the opportunity to take pride in being a part of the Greenwood Art Project. And that part is what really resonated with me. Being a part of this community, born and raised, a member of this community, completely dedicated to watching it continue to grow and to thrive, and to see the rebuilding of the Greenwood District in a way that honors its historical significance. Hearing that and seeing that at that moment is what really inspired and engaged me to really get into this space and to really get behind him to make this happen. Tulsa needed something beautiful. Tulsa needed to feel engaged and involved in its own trajectory. I think a lot of the disconnect in the community was things being forced upon them and not having a voice and not having a say. And so being able to be a part of the community having a say in how it tells its story, because there's a pride in that. There's a significance in being able to no longer be silenced. There's a significance in a community being able to speak for themselves and to provide the necessary subtle nuances that are required to really help the world understand what Tulsa has gone through, but then how they're using that to build a bridge to where they are going and really be, to be an example on so many ways. Black Wall Street, Greenwood District, they were literally a blueprint for so many other cities that have come up after. Cities that are thriving in their economic prowess, cities that leave space for people of color to dream and to grow and to build. And so I think with this project and having the community involved to tell that story, that is only going to continue to provide the blueprint on how we continue to grow. And then also how we use art in that process. And so all of that first meeting, is what flashed in front of my eyes. And it's beautiful to see it coming together in that way. And so I'm excited. I'm excited for Centennial to get here. It's going to knock your socks off.
You know, Jerrica, you bring up something that's really interesting that I remember about that process too, was that, you know, it wasn't so easy to get. I mean, it wasn't an automatic that we could do this where we'd have it like, you know, lots of people involved, because that initial question, I remember like having a number of meetings, different meetings. And it was so interesting how it broke down. Like I would ask the question, you know, if people thought that the Centennial would be better served by having fewer artists with larger budgets, or more artists with smaller budgets. You know, when I asked that question, it was so interesting how it broke down, because, you know, it was mostly the artists that had like a lot more experience working in institutions and museums and, you know, performing halls and that kind of stuff. You know, they all want it like, you know, oh, we got to have big budgets. We got to big budgets are the best, you know? And so they were like all for, they're like, you know, oh, do four or five people with, you know, larger budgets, you know, whatever. But then there were the people from the community that were around. There were people saying, look, you know, I just want to be a part of telling this story, you know, and they didn't, you know, they didn't care about the budget and the money, you know, they just wanted to be a part of telling the story. And so they were like, you know, yeah, we could take, you know, smaller budgets are fine, you know, as long as we can have the city telling the story. And so it took a little while to finesse that, though, to get that kind of solidified where we felt comfortable that we could do it that way.
Yeah. I'd like to end with a question of, you know, kind of a what's next question, which is, you know, anniversaries and those moments are easy to capitalize on, but of course, they're also easy to kind of pin a lot of things on and then easily have the community move on and not think about things after that. And I know that you want the work of the project to go far beyond the weekend or a couple of days that actually marked the centennial. What is the role of the Greenwood Art Project in 2022, 23? You know, how do you see this thing moving past just the centennial?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, most people that know my work, they know that generally when you have an opening for things, you know, most people think, okay, well, the work's done and now it's just, you know, it's up for people to see and it's all over. But to me, it's always like the opening of things for my work is generally the beginning. You know, it's the beginning of the conversation that should continue and manifest itself in different ways as it moves forward. And certainly that's the case with the Tulsa Massacre, because, you know, the massacre has a very specific history, but the undercurrent of that history is the issue of race relations. And there is nothing more relevant in the conversation of the United States at this moment than the issue of race. And that conversation is just beginning in earnest. You know, I mean, in the last, you know, year or so, it's really kind of taking a much more serious role. And I think, and the reason I say that is because the issue of race now is kind of moving, you know, it's expanding beyond conversations that, you know, Black and brown people are having now. And it is inclusive of, you know, other folks. And so I think, you know, the ground is set for a deeper and longer conversation, you know, to happen around this. And so my hope is that the centennial of the Tulsa Massacre could continue to be a basis for that conversation to happen. And, you know, we're in some early conversations with, you know, Greenwood Rising and some other entities about how we can kind of do that going forward. I mean, and we, of course, we have the Gap Van that we're going to continue to, you know, to use that as a vehicle to kind of, you know, engage around the conversation of race after the massacre, you know, just going forward. So that will continue to happen. And hopefully, I mean, I can't really speak on it right now, but I'm hoping that there will be something significant that the you know, the Tulsa community will be the center platform for conversations around race in the coming years.
Well, that's our show for this week. Our program is produced and edited by Jack Dean. Museum Confidential is a co-production of Philbrick Museum of Art, Public Radio Tulsa, and the Greenwood Art Project. To learn more about the museum, the station, and the project, visit philbrick.org, publicradiotulsa.org, or greenwoodartproject.org. Or visit all of them. We suggest all of them. Until next time, look closer.